Well, good morning and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studio in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-County. And the voice I have this morning on the Local Spotlight Show, I got a couple voices. I got John Mackin, the NASA ambassador, is back with us. And also my son, Michael Lorden, is with us. A couple science guys, because I'm not so much of a science guy. But before we start on our subject today, I would like to just call back in some of the memory. I'm showing my age right now, but there was a sitcom from 1963 to 1966, and it was called My Favorite Martian. They had 107 episodes total. The first two seasons were in black and white, and the third and final season was in color. And My Favorite Martian, it starred Ray Watson, who they called Uncle Martin, and then there was Bill Bixby. And he came from another planet and was living in his house. He had antennas that would come out of his head. And anyway, when I was a kid, we watched that all the time and just got a big riot out of it. And the thought that has always been, that I've known is, you know, like, is there life on other planets? Is there life out there other than ours? And when I had John in the studio a few weeks ago, we got talking after he was talking about the eclipse. We got talking a little bit, and we brought up the subject, is there life out there? And John started talking about it, and he explained a few things that, yes, there possibly was. John, welcome. How are you?
Nice to be back. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's, how about those, explain exoplanets and about the possibility of life.
So exoplanets are planets outside of our solar system. So, you know, we have our eight planets, formerly nine, now eight. There are other stars that have planets that go around them as well. So the first one was discovered around 1996. Scientists were actually looking at a star that was called a pulsar, and its brightness should change repetitively over time, and they were seeing strange data. And from that, they deduced that there was a planet there. And this was done from an Earth-based telescope, which makes it even more amazing because you have to see through the atmosphere in order to collect this data. So today, most of the exoplanets we find are with space-based telescopes and satellites.
Ah, a little better advantage.
How many exoplanets are out there?
So as of this month, we've found 5,599. Let's call it 5,600 just to round it off. And those planets are in about 4,300 different solar systems. So some of these solar systems have a single planet, others have multiple planets. And there's about another 10,000 that we have data for that we're still going through look at the data to see if there's really proof of an exoplanet there.
Oh. So you're just basically just picking out stars and just observing them over time and seeing what sort of data you collect, and if it matches up with the exoplanet data, then you know there's one there. So how exactly is that determined, I guess?
So they collect data with most of these space-based satellites and telescopes, and there's a couple different methods they use. So one is called the wobble method.
Okay.
Technically, it's called the radial velocity method. So velocity is speed. Radial means you're going in a circle, uh-huh. Or for planets, they're in an ellipse, like a flattened circle is how they travel around their stars. So think about it as taking a large weight and putting it on a rope, mm-hmm. and swinging it over your head. If it's heavy enough, you would move back and forth with the weight.
Right.
And so we can measure the light coming from that star as it wobbles. We now have the technology to do that. And from that, we can determine, you know, is there a planet, how many, what their mass is, what the time it takes for them to go around their star. So that was the first way that we found things.
Okay.
Yeah, the second way, the one that's been most used, is called the transit method. So transit means to have something pass in front of something else. So think of, you know, putting your hand out and putting it in front of a light bulb. It reduces the light that you see.
Right.
So planets can do that. If a planet goes around in front of the star, it'll block a little bit of the light, a tiny amount.
Right.
We can measure that now. And from that, we can determine how many planets are there. The newest method is called gravitational lensing.
Oh.
Yeah, this goes all the way back to Einstein in like the 1900s. He proposed this, and it's just recently that we've had the technology to see this.
Uh-huh.
So
a planet, on that note, yeah. How smart was Einstein? I mean, he was in the 1900s. He was predicting this.
He was predicting this in his theories. So, just amazing, one of a kind person.
Yeah. Has there been anybody like Einstein?
We've had people like him since. There was a gentleman whose name escapes me at the moment, mm-hmm. passed away a couple of years ago, who was considered extremely smart. If you ever saw The Big Bang Show, he was sometimes featured on The Big Bang Show. He was in a wheelchair.
Okay.
Stephen Hawking.
Thank you. Stephen Hawking.
Good job, Michael.
Yeah, for a guy who he wasn't always in a wheelchair, he contracted a disease later in life, in his 30s or 40s, and became wheelchair-bound and couldn't talk. And he was still writing books by touching keyboards. With a stick in his mouth and things like that.
And sorry to interrupt. No, but I mean, he was basically just, you know, doing all of this in his head.
Right, right.
Which, yeah, that's insane.
Right, and he discovered things about black holes and other things kind of on the same level as Einstein back in the 1900s. So, so Einstein talked about this gravitational lensing, and he said if you have a large body like a planet, and think of light coming around, you know, on the left and right side from a star, that gravity of that planet will bend the light and cause it to combine, and it will change how bright the star looks. So that's the latest method that we're using to be able to see these exoplanets.
And the big question is there, do you think there's other life out there on those planets?
So let's stop for a minute and we'll talk about how we, what we've used to find these. So I mentioned the ground-based telescopes, but we now have other satellites in space. So there's been 8 dedicated to exoplanets, 5 are still functional. And one of them is the Kepler space satellite, and it looked at the sky for 9 years, the entire sky, looking for these transits. And that's why we're still analyzing all that data for those 10,000 other possible exoplanets. There's so much data, it's going to take years to go through it. But one of the newest pieces of equipment is the James Webb Telescope. Went into space a couple of years ago, and it's not just for exoplanets, but has a really cool piece of equipment on it called a spectrophotometer. It can analyze light.
Mm-hmm.
So it can tell us if a planet has an atmosphere and what molecules are in the atmosphere.
Mm.
Just pretty incredible. So we have found planets that have water, carbon dioxide and methane in their atmospheres. Carbon dioxide and methane could be a sign of life, but it could also be geologically created. So maybe there is, maybe there isn't life. There's another molecule we look for. We found it on one planet. It's dimethyl sulfide. And based on biology here on Earth, the only way that can be made is by a living organism. So this is a planet that's a gas giant.
Hmm.
So it's like Jupiter or Saturn. And, you know, we don't think there might be life at those kind of planets, but
right.
There could be, yeah.
Could be. I figured that the gravity would just be too great for any sort of life to develop.
Yeah, it is a factor on a planet like that. Plus, you have no surface. It's
right, just it's just gas.
One big giant gas ball. So what we really are hoping to find and starting to find more of are Earth-like planets.
Right.
So they're called rocky terrestrial planets, and we would love them to be in the habitable zone. So this is the area away from the sun, the orbit where water would still be a liquid on the planet.
Right. They call that the Goldilocks
zone,
right?
They do, yeah, Goldilocks zone.
Not too hot, not too cold, just right.
Yeah. So if the planet's too far from the sun, all the water's frozen. If it's too close, it's all boiled away. And we believe you need water for life. So we've actually found some of those. The closest one is Proxima Centauri. It's 4 light years away.
Proxima Centauri.
Centauri. Yeah. You may have heard of the star Alpha Centauri in some, you know, science fiction. It's a real star. So this is a planet that goes around Alpha Centauri. But let's talk about 4 light years for a minute. That doesn't sound like much.
But it is.
It is. So a light year is the distance light travels in 1 year. And light moves at 186,000 miles a second.
Yes.
A second. So to put it kind of in terms that we all live with every day, if you got in your car and you could drive to Proxima Centauri at 60 miles an hour, it would take you 47 million years to get there.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, but this is the closest one to us. It's in the habitable zone. Temperature, they estimate, is about minus 40, so a little chilly.
Yes.
Okay.
Light, so, you know, 4 light years away, I mean, I guess that really means we're seeing light from 4 years ago.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So, you're 4 years behind of what's actually going on there.
Mm-hmm. So, the chances of anybody or any other life visiting our planet is kind of a null.
Yeah, it's with there's going to have to be a major change in propulsion technology or even the understanding of physics. So, right.
Because if you think, I mean, well, here's another thing too, is you start to approach the speed of light, it, you know, it changes how, well, man, I'm butchering, probably going to butcher this, but things relative to you start to move slower as you increase towards the speed of light. So if you were going to travel to the sun and back, you know, at half the speed of light, it would take you, I don't know, what would it be? Like your perceptive would be something around like 4 years, and everybody on Earth would be a little bit longer than that. So I feel like, you know.
Isn't there a term, if you could go as fast as light, everything stands still? Is that right? What is that?
Well, you couldn't go as fast as light. No. That's sort of the universal speed limit, and it gets harder and harder as you approach it. But
I know, but I thought Einstein said something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things that happen when you go that fast. But like you said, you can't really achieve that. The problem with it is if anybody remembers E equals MC squared, the famous equation that everybody talks about with Einstein, the faster you go, the heavier, the more massive you become. So if we even at this point tried to build a ship that went even any small percentage of the speed of light, it's like the faster it goes, the more it weighs, the more energy you need to move it, the more fuel you need. It's this cycle you can't really break.
Unfortunately, yeah. You can't just use F equals MA.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the time dilation you mentioned is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Even the astronauts on the space station.
Experience.
You know, they're traveling 17,000 miles an hour, which again is a tiny, tiny amount of speed compared to the speed of light. But if they're up there for 6 months or a year, they're some fraction of a second younger than, say, their twin, if their twin was living on Earth. So, time changes. It's things we just don't really think about in our everyday life because we don't experience it.
John, how many planets are there that are like Earth out there?
Well, that's hard to come up with a number at like this point in time. We've just started finding more Earth-like planets because they're smaller than the gas giants that are out there. We found those first.
Smaller than our planet or just smaller than?
Just smaller in comparison. So there are super Earths that are like Earth, but they're, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 times bigger than Earth. So the bigger a planet is, the easier it is to find. And Earth is considered smaller on the scale of sizes. So, but our technology is starting to let us find these smaller ones that are close to Earth.
I'm guessing that has something to do with how much light's the change in light detected. You're sort of signal to noise ratio, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it really comes down to. We're able to see fainter and fainter transits of those planets going in front of suns. And so that leads us to find planets like there's one that's most like Earth. It's actually kind of talked about as being Earth 2.0.
Oh, really?
It's Kepler 452b. So it was found by the Kepler All Sky Transit satellite. Okay. It's interesting. It has a 384-day year, so the year's just a little longer than on Earth. But it's got twice the gravity.
Ooh.
So if you weighed 150 pounds here, you'd weigh about 300 there. It would feel heavier. It's bigger than Earth, but it's been there longer than Earth has been around. So it's possible that life has already started there. But it's 1,800 light years away.
Ooh.
So it's amazing that we know this information, but it's so far away. There's another interesting system called TRAPPIST-1. It actually has seven planets.
Yeah.
And five are in the habitable zone. And one of them is 50 degrees Fahrenheit all day long.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But what factors into this one is it's only 400 million years old. And we consider that too short for life to develop.
Oh, right.
How old's Earth?
So Earth is about 4.5 billion years old.
Wow.
So, and the universe is considered to be around 13 billion.
Oh.
And we haven't been here really very long on that time scale, but, you know, being that Earth's been around for 4.5 billion, it's given time for all the steps of life to develop to get to us. So,
how long have we been here? What would you say? What do they say? What are they guessing?
A couple hundred thousand years,
just
maybe.
A couple hundred thousand.
Well, how about the simplest form of life? How long has that been here? Is there?
Well, the Earth started as a very hot lava kind of like planet that cooled down. So you had to go through that cool down phase. So it took several billion years after it started to form before any life showed up. And it was in the oceans at first, and then came on to land. So,
if people are listening and they're interested in learning more about the planets and the solar systems and all of those, where can they go to find that info?
So NASA has this really great website called NASA EYES, E-Y-E-S.
Okay.
And you can see information about our planets and our solar system, asteroids, exoplanets. And what's really interesting is you can dig deep into this data, and it's all picture-driven. It's all graphical. So if you wanted to see what Kepler-452, we think it looks like, you can go and search that, and it will zoom you right in on the planet, and you can see what it looks like based on all the data that we have. So it's a really great site because everything's changed into pictures. So you can see, and you can do comparisons to the size of Earth. You can turn the habitable zone on and off to see where these planets are located. So you could spend hours just kind of digging your way through a lot of things that interest you there.
Now what we do have coming, we're about ready to run out of time, but we have the eclipse coming up April 8th around 2 o'clock. What time is it going to be?
Correct. Yeah, about 2 o'clock will be the maximum.
And any suggestions on that? A little bit of, we talked about it before, but just to remind people.
Right. Remember, it's not a 100% eclipse here, so you want to keep those eclipse glasses on the entire time so you don't damage your eyes in any way. And those glasses, of course, you know, Amazon has them, a lot of websites, a lot of stores probably carrying them too. So,
but not sunglasses.
Not sunglasses.
They got to be eclipse glasses.
They do. Sunglasses aren't dark enough to block that UV light that could damage your eyes. So,
yeah. Or a welding hood if you got one.
A welding hood. Okay.
Yeah. Back in our day, you used to get a couple of pieces of exposed 35mm film from the end of your camera. You know, film.
Oh, no kidding.
And you could put those together, but that's long ago.
That's pretty cool.
Where are you spending your time on the eclipse? What's going on with you, John?
So I'm going to be down at Lake Kincaid outside of Murfreesboro.
Okay.
We've got a pontoon boat that we're going to drop in the water. It'd probably be a little chilly to go out, but that's where we were 7 years ago. It was just amazing to watch that from the water. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you say the water, would the river count, or you need a big lake? It could be amazing.
No, I think it'll be amazing anywhere we're at, you know, because it's one of those once in a lifetime events, although we get twice in a lifetime kind of with 7 years apart. So,
all right, Michael, anything to add?
I had to, not looking at the eclipse. Man, I saw the eclipse at Mizzou a few years ago, and man, it was like whenever it was past that totality point, it was pretty difficult to resist looking at it with, like, without the glasses on. It's like, man, I can see why people go blind from it.
Well, John, thanks again for coming in this morning, and appreciate you, and keep up all the good work. We love it.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one, John.